brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo, and I'm here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Napsker. They are both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they are pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. Peter, where are we in the church year?
Today we're talking about the transfiguration of Jesus. It's this hinge between Epiphany and the season of Lent.
And David, what are the texts for this week?
The text would be 2 Kings 2 or Exodus 34, Psalm 50, 2 Corinthians 3, and Mark chapter 9.
As always, I ask each of you to tell me which text you would choose to preach about. Peter, will you go first?
Sure. I think I'm leaning toward preaching on Mark chapter 9, the gospel reading. And part of that is it's hard sometimes. Transfiguration is a hard Sunday to preach, I think.
I agree.
Why do you find it hard?
It's such an odd moment. Why did it happen? I mean, I can't see his ministry happening without his baptism. I can't see his ministry happening without a lot of things. This thing, it's kind of thrown in there. So it's always odd to me.
It's such a strange experience. You'd expect the disciples after this to just be to be very confident and never have any doubts again.
Right,
but
yeah.
It's like this blip where they get to see something and then they kind of forget about it. And to me, that's one of the reasons it's hard. It's also hard, I think, just because it's such a sensory event that it's like telling somebody about a sunset. You know, you try to tell them how beautiful it was and it was so, you know, it was wonderful and the colors were incredible. And they can't see it, and so you can't. It's just hard to recreate, I think.
I love this story.
You do?
I think because I like literature and I like reading, and so I like foreshadowing, and I like when themes are interwoven throughout stories, and this seems to, like, tie a bow on so many Old Testament things. I just think it's kind of cool.
I thought you were going to say it foreshadows the resurrection, but you see it as tying a bow on the Old Testament.
Sure. The law and the prophets. Moses is the law. Elijah is the prophets. And then the whole thing of Moses not getting to go into the promised land, but
now
he does.
He's there. Right.
And Everything pointing to Jesus, all the law and prophets pointing to Jesus. I don't know. I always got kind of excited about this story.
I think that's actually one of the things that's kind of hard about it, because how much do you go into the story of Moses? How much do you go into the story of Elijah? There's a lot there that you could unpack, and it leaves a lot of questions hanging, to me at least. But you enjoy it, so that's good. For me, at least, the challenge is this is such an incredible experience, and you can't recreate this for your hearers. I don't care how much you try to describe it, how much you try to kind of show a picture of it or something like that. You just can't do that. To think about the sensory experience of the apostles, Peter, James, and John, but by contrasting it with our sensory experience, the experience of a Christian today. Okay. And so I'm thinking about a little bit of a comparison contrast way of thinking about these things. And so the first thing that stood out to me, well, actually, Jessica, would you read verse 4, verse 7, and verse 9?
And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." And as they were coming down the mountain, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead.
So I'm thinking about seeing, hearing, and telling, these three things that kind of come out of the text. And so I think you do need to spend a little bit of time describing what did they see. And this is maybe where you'd pull in Moses and Elijah, the fact that these two kind of bring with them the entire Old Testament story. So one thing, again, I've said this before, I think, in festival services, it's not a bad time to kind of tell the whole story, the big story, because you can locate the event. You know, what does the transfiguration have to do with kind of the gospel? We'll put it in the bigger scope of the whole story, and you've got Moses and Elijah. So with Moses and Elijah there, Peter, James, and John see Jesus in his glory. It's incredible, bright, you know, brighter than snow, brighter than the sun kind of thing. That's so unlike what we experience today. We see Jesus Well, we don't see Jesus, but we see him hidden behind the church. We see him hidden in the sacraments. We see him hidden in his word. And so the contrast between seen and not seen, I think I would maybe reflect a little bit on the hiddenness of God in this part of the sermon.
And why would that be helpful?
Well, I think it would be to name what people experience.
Okay.
You know, we talk about, you know, we can see the crucifix or the cross up on the altar, but we don't actually see Jesus, and that's kind of hard. You know, you kind of got to trust. I actually think of, I thought of this, our church has a big stained glass window in the front of its sanctuary, and I don't know why, but it's not one of those where you have it lit up from the back. So when there's an evening service, what's really interesting, it was maybe a year ago, I was sitting there during an evening service, and the service began when it was still light out, and you could see Jesus.
And then it just got dark.
It got darker and darker and darker until you couldn't, I mean, you know how it is with a stained glass window,
right?
When it's up against a black background, all you see is lines.
Right.
And you can hardly even see Jesus. And I was thinking about that as a time when that kind of captures the experience of the Christian today. You know he's up there, but you can't see him.
I really like that image. I think you should use that image.
Yeah.
Yeah, because and talk about how that's just one church service, but for some Christians, that's what their life can be like, right? When they first come to the faith, you know, I'm thinking about adult conversions. Mm-hmm. Everything is powerful, and Christ is so present and real and active in their lives. And then over time, it kind of seems like he's harder to see, and it's not as fresh and new as it always was. And that doesn't mean that he's not there.
Right,
but,
right.
And that's the whole point, I think, of what you're getting at,
right.
Is that, you know, we're called to live in trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the Christ, and this is what he's like, but we trust that he's there, even though we don't see him. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, so they saw him, but we don't.
Right.
And you could work with that, and I think a lot of different experiences people have, whether you're a new Christian or even long dyed in the wool, sometimes really have a hard time seeing. Well, because he doesn't show himself. He hides himself. That's the whole point of kind of the idea behind some of our rich Lutheran theology, is that God is hidden in Christ. So that would be something I'd want to highlight, that sense of seeing in contrast. Then I want to think about this is my beloved son, the voice says, listen to him. And I want to think about one thing we do share with the apostles is we listen to Jesus. We don't get to see him, but we do get to hear him. And that's where, you know, through the apostolic testimony, we hear him in the preaching of the gospel. We hear him in the mutual conversation and consolation of brothers and sisters. We hear him in his promises. And so I want to draw attention, kind of shift attention away from what we don't see to what we do hear. I would invite people to reflect on what have they heard from Jesus, and not so much tell them what to hear, but have them name for themselves, what have you heard? And let people reflect on what promises, maybe I'd guide them a little bit, what promises have you heard from Jesus that are significant to you? I'd have some little note cards or some, I did this in my congregation one time, passed out note cards, had it in the bulletin, and had them write down, what have you heard Jesus say? What's a promise you've heard from him? And then have it be a little bit more participatory. Let them reflect on what have they heard. You could, if you wanted to just give them something to hear. This text is surrounded by the promise of the resurrection, you know, in the previous chapter. And then later on in chapter 9, verse 31, Jesus again repeats his death and resurrection. And so that would be something that we hear loud and clear from Jesus. But I'd want to think about listening, kind of moving away from seeing toward listening. I think of that. There's a quote from Luther where he says, if you want to see Jesus, stick your eyes in your ears. Steck die Augen in die Ohren. Put your eyes in your ears. Then you get to see Jesus through hearing him. So then you move from what we don't see, he appeared to them, to what we do hear. And then the last move would be then verse 9, he charged them to tell no one. So tell no one until the resurrection. And then once he's been risen from the dead, now you go tell. And so then I would compare, again, I would, the similar message to our hearers today that Jesus gave to the apostles is, when he's risen, then go tell. So we move from what we don't see to what we do hear to what we do tell, and that's a proclamation of the resurrection of Jesus, our hope, our confidence, especially going into next week in the season of Lent. We're still going to be thinking about his resurrection. We're still going to be speaking of his resurrection even during these next couple of months.
You know, if you were working with that opening image of the stained glass window, so the opening where you talk about the whole service and it moved from seeing Jesus to not seeing Jesus, that's the seeing part. But then you could reflect on what you heard during the service,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I'm wondering if there's something that could move you to the telling that relates to that opening scene, because then you could kind of have the whole sermon be kind of meditating on this moment,
yeah.
of a worship service and what's going on.
Because
I really think it's a powerful image, and I think it captures that.
So here's when I was in my church having this happen, it was really almost a profound experience, because you're watching Jesus kind of fade away, and then we're kind of a liturgical congregation, but it's in the inner city, and so we have an eclectic collection of people who come on different, this was an evening service, and we had somebody that I've never seen before sing a duet with one of our members. It was kind of like a gospel soul song.
Mm-hmm.
It was the soon and very soon,
oh,
we're going to see the king.
Yeah, that's
and
nice.
So these two ladies were singing this, soon and very soon we're going to see the king, and it was a really beautiful rendition of it. And it's while they were singing that I was watching Jesus fade away.
Wow.
And so I wonder if that, to answer your question,
yes,
Dave, that would be a way to tie that
yes.
back. What do we
right.
see? Well, we see soon and very soon we're going to, that's what we're going to say.
Yes. Right.
Even though we don't see him now. So I think that could maybe work.
Yeah. Oh, I think that does.
What a helpful image for high schoolers who, when I would lead Bible study and they would not feel that Jesus is with them or not feel that they can see Jesus, and for them to know that it's okay that they don't feel it, that stained glass window is still there even if it's all dark.
Yeah, and you do get glimpses every once in a while. You know, it's bright sometimes. You can see him more clearly than other times. But even those are just foreshadows and glimpses of what's to come.
David, what about you? What would you preach on?
Well, I would go with the Transfiguration text also.
Hooray!
Okay. Yeah, I know.
Good. I want to hear what you're going to say.
Well, it's kind of, I don't know. For me, the text, I'm thinking of it relationally, that there's something about seeing this aspect of Jesus which changes your life. And so I think you guys know that I recently took up watercolor painting.
That's what I heard.
And it is not good. It is so bad. The instructor, the friend of mine, he comes over, and the first time he like gives me this little bird. He's drawn this bird, and he's like, paint the bird, blah, blah, blah. So he goes away, and then he comes back the next week, and he sees my blobs, not birds, but blobs.
<There's> blobs.
And he's like, perhaps we should work on brush strokes. So it is so bad. But this is the thing. I have seen the paintings he does. And having seen those paintings, I trust what he says to me.
Hmm.
Because, I mean, he can do it.
Right.
And because he can do it, I trust whatever he says. If he says work on brush strokes, I'm going to work on brush strokes until I'm permitted to go to first grade, right? So, but that's the...
Is this finger painting or is
this... I know it should be. It looks like it, actually. So it's just this this idea, when you think about the Transfiguration, you know, I mean, you read, Jessica, earlier, you read that line that the Father says, this is my beloved Son, listen to him. I thought to myself, well, why doesn't God say, look at him?
Hmm.
I mean, this has been such an amazing experience, right? I mean, you see Jesus, and he kind of is bleeding light out at you, and so much so that his garments are kind of shining because of the light coming out of his body and piercing the garments. And then you've got Moses and Elijah talking with them. How do you know it's Moses and Elijah?
Yeah. I've always wondered that.
It's
how would they know what they look like?
Is it because of what they were talking about, or was it just kind of this innate sense of who these people are? I don't know. Jesus say, here's Moses and Elijah? I don't know, right? But, you know, so you've got these amazing visions, and you would think God would say, this is my beloved son, look at him. And instead God says, listen to him. And I thought, well, why would God say that? And then I thought, you know what? When I've seen somebody do something remarkable, like my friend who paints, and I want to follow in his footsteps, I'm going to listen to him, because he's shown me where it's all headed. And I think that's kind of how I look at the Transfiguration, mm-hmm. that Jesus is revealing who he truly is to this small group of disciples. And it's not just Jesus, but it's Jesus and all of, you know, and the prophets, the law and the prophets, all there. And having seen that, I will now listen to what he has to say, trusting that what he says is going to be right. It's going to be good. It may be words that correct me, that pull me back from something I'm thinking of doing. It may be words that encourage me in an area where I'm afraid and I don't have courage, but I'm going to listen, because the one who's speaking to me is the one who has already fulfilled the promises of God. And so that's kind of how I would look at it, I think.
So I think this is helpful, because it does focus on listening. The question is, what do you are you suggesting kind of a general listening to him, or are you going to kind of say listen to him and then listen to this?
I'm going to go. Yeah, I think I would actually move into specific things that I think my members need to hear.
That's where the contextualization
right.
for the sermon
right, yeah.
becomes really important.
Because it's interesting. You know, you've got Jesus being transfigured, but he's in the presence of prophets who, when they spoke, kind of transfigured the world around them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of what Jesus is doing, is he's preparing the disciples to speak the words that will transfigure lives. Mm-hmm. And transfigure our world. And so I would kind of focus on areas that are in need of transfiguration, right? Need of change, need mm-hmm. of fulfillment, and encourage my people with the promises of God, either for courageous action or for moving away from despair, because of Christ who is present and who rules all things and is speaking to us. I mean, because, you know, you think about, you know, we're following Jesus, but, I'm old and I am not even beginning the path yet, you know? I mean, it's such a journey. And
well, that's Luther, right, at the end of his life saying you got to listen to Jesus and follow him for 100 years if you want to really be a disciple.
Right. We're beggars all.
Right.
Right, yeah. So it's an encouraging word, I think, to people, not to try to experience this glorious moment with Jesus like, you know, some type of prosperity gospel thing.
Right.
But rather to trust that's Jesus, that's the glorious moment, and this is the one who's speaking to you about how to live tomorrow.
Yeah. So the transfiguration then is, we're looking at Jesus' transfiguration, but we're aiming toward bringing about some sort of transformation in the lives of our hearers.
Right.
Based on what Jesus said.
Right. Yeah.
You just said transformation instead of transfiguration. And I think that might be a good explanation in your sermon. Not that people don't know what transfiguration is, but when do you ever use it? But transformation is something that people would use more often. So maybe even just talking about what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from transfiguration to transformation. Now, the one thing you want to be careful with there, I think, is not just to talk about transformation, but to speak words that bring it about. Mm-hmm. And that's where the commands and the promises of God that actually do change lives.
Well, and then think about moments in your life when something was transformed because of what somebody said.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When you've hurt somebody through something you've said or you've done, and they say, I forgive you, and just how everything changes because of that.
Well, right? That picks back up on, you said initially, David, you talked about kind of a relational approach to this
right.
text.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, our words, the words we speak, the words of forgiveness, the words of comfort and promise, those do transform relationships.
Right.
And it wouldn't be too hard to think of some examples of people whose relationships have been completely transformed by words that were said.
Yeah. And if let's say you use the relational structure on this one.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you go with the me, we, God, you, us. So me, I would tell the story of my watercolor adventures and how somebody who's the master, I can listen to his words because of I've seen the glory of what he does, right? And then talk to us, to the we section would be, have you ever had, you know, encounters with people that you're going to listen to because you've seen what they can do? And you could, you know, it could be somebody playing basketball who's watched the coach do something, or, you know, you just think different stations in life so that we all have a sense of what it means to have seen the excellencies, or seen the beauty, or seen the power of somebody's words or actions or deeds that have enabled us to listen to them more closely.
Mm-hmm.
Then you move to the God, which is the section of the text where you kind of say something like this is happening in the text. Jesus is transfigured. Rather than say, look at him, God says, listen to him. The disciples are called to listen to this Jesus because he's in the work of transfiguring the world. And ultimately, on the last day, everything will be made new, right? So that's your kind of your text section. And then you move to the you. So then how do we live? Well, we live by listening to Jesus. What are some of the things that Jesus says? And so you're encouraging us to hear that word of Jesus and to live into it with courage, however you want, you know, whatever.
And you're speaking the words, you know, let me remind you what he said to you and let me tell you what he says to you.
Right.
That's where you can have some kind of first, second person proclamation.
Right. And then the beauty of that relational structure is that last section, the us section, because here we now think to ourselves, how can we as a community be people who support one another as they listen to Jesus?
Hmm.
What can I do for my neighbor to help my neighbor listen more closely to Jesus? What are the things that I can do? And it might be something as normal as a Bible study group where you're actually talking with people. It might be texting in the morning as you're talking with somebody, sharing a Bible verse.
Might be teaching someone how to watercolor.
Teaching, yeah. Well, I'll tell you. If that's possible, right? Yeah, that's what we will find out. So, but yeah, I think it's that relational connection that this brilliant and beautiful revelation causes me to listen more closely and trust more firmly in what Jesus says.
What I like about that is it takes something that's kind of a spectacle almost and so otherworldly and so distant from our experience and brings it into our relationships.
Right.
That can be really helpful.
And that's my struggle with the Transfiguration. How does this thing fit?
Yeah.
Right. And I think this is one way in which it could fit, at least for me.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, that's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. You'll also find a picture of David's most recent watercolor there. You'll also find episodes of our other podcast, Tangible Theology Learned and Lived. I'll talk with a variety of professors on a variety of topics, but it's always pointing to the ways in which faith permeates all aspects of life. It's Tangible Theology Learned and Lived. You can find more episodes of this show on any of the major podcast apps. If you'd like to see the show continue, please subscribe, share, and leave a review. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker will spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
I don't know how they know they're Moses and Elijah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
The beard. Moses had a long white beard. He looked like Charlton Heston.
He was still holding the tablets.
The tablets, that's right, yeah.